Harold.
To write in the beginning of the visit with Mr. Weaver this Sunday morning, the 8th of August, 1971, with Jim and Suzanne. This is Channel 2 Right in the beginning of the visit with Mr. Weaver this Sunday morning, the 8th of August, 1971, with Jim and Suzanne. This is Sunday, Channel 2 Right and the beginning of the visit with Mr. Weaver this Sunday morning, the 8th of August, 1971.
That's light.
Well, but then,
what about the front room?
Well, this is better in here. What about here?
Here?
No, in here.
Well, that's our official light. Oh,
oh, you can't work? He'll be better. He does better in here.
All right.
Can you?
Hi, guys. Good afternoon. I said good afternoon, didn't I, when I came in?
Is this typical of that French expedition?
No. What we did was, in fact, both Katie Osborne and I were awake before Katie Bowers was up, but we were trying to finish the supper dishes and get groceries for tonight. And I had the grocery store wasn't open till 9, and then I had to prepare stuff when I got it.
Say, this artificial light.
Yeah, I don't know much. The color of the thing.
We just work better in here.
We don't have to work in here. We can go in.
Oh. Well, I think this is...
While you're here, let me ask you. You see, I don't know what's going to happen next. It's 11 o'clock, you see, and we're going to start early this morning.
I know. I know. And then I had to take Katie over to Cross Creek and come back. That takes about half an hour, doesn't it?
Oh, it's a long ways over there.
Yeah, I didn't realize how far.
Let me tell you, on this on your that January was about the high point of that trip over in France when you all were at the Della Robbia.
Let's just talk a while and then and then you can do something else.
Debbie talked about it as if that's one of the spots she didn't want to leave.
The Della Robbia.
Yes.
But she liked the Unall family, too. I think that was quite an experience with them. Then in February was Mont Saint-Michel and Chartres and Italy, which she enjoyed.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. That's right. Yeah.
I think any more than a month of the Della Robbia would have been too much elegance. It was a very elegant place.
Oh, it was. Well, now, she didn't bring that out. Let me get my drift here. She didn't bring out the elegance. She just talked about the fine food and that master of the kitchen.
Yes.
Quite impressed her. I've been out cutting vines and
I tried calling earlier. I guess you were out. I tried to call to say that we were going to be hung up so that you wouldn't be. I couldn't get any answer. I knew that it was thoughtless of me to say I'd be out here at 7 o'clock in the morning, 9 o'clock in the morning.
The telephone rang a time or two, but then it quit ringing.
Oh, really? I hung on for a long time.
Oh, it's a curious thing. It's these, it's electronic stuff. And there's nothing they can do about it, apparently.
Oh.
They got...
You mean you were on the line and I didn't know that?
I didn't pick it up. It didn't wait till I got there. It rang a couple of times and then quit.
But see, and also this is a big party line.
Well, it's
just
two party.
Oh, yeah.
So it's not the party side. It could be, but it's not this time of day, probably.
Well, that's too bad.
So that was more than a month would have been too much elegance.
Well, I think so. I stayed there after we came back from France. And Italy. I went back to the Della Robbia for a little while. I had sort of wanted to take off, but then when Phoebe decided she wanted to come, and she wanted to be near Debbie, and so I went back to the Della Robbia and so that Phoebe could be there. And I felt that it was like having too much dessert, you know. It was very rich food. They're very nice. And I was the longest, I call it myself the oldest living inhabitant of the Della Robbia because I had been coming back there so much.
And
I...
Headquarters.
Mm-hmm. I had taken a week or 10 days out at St. Paul de Vos, which was a little perched village, and that was a simpler hotel. And I just loved that.
Oh, really? Not
and I did better painting, I think, when I got out there and got on my own, and I kind of didn't want to come back.
Oh, yes, that was out in what then we called the Hamlets, the, I forget what she called it. She liked that, I remember, but she didn't talk about that much.
She went out to visit, so we went out several times in the day, and I think she was with me the day I found the hotel I wanted to stay in.
Mm-hmm.
And we would take daytime, it only took an hour to get out there, and we'd take daytime expeditions, and she'd take her studying along and go into a cafe and buy a cup of coffee and study while I was painting, if it was cold, which it usually was. You know, those medieval villages that are all made of stone, and the wind whistling through those stone streets is pretty cold. I had ski underwear. I don't know whether she did or not, but I would put on my long johns and sit in the street and paint.
Yeah, and you needed them down there.
I certainly did. That was...
Yeah. But, you know, I didn't realize it. If you read through that little thing Debbie did and the piece I wrote at the end, depressed over the prospect of her leaving that Christmas with you all before she had picked up a few little things I'd learned out here. It's just recent, things that we'd learned recent. And then I didn't see what went on at all. You see, she wrote for a month. She didn't write long. It was just solid writing.
This is coming when she came back?
Yes, when she got back here.
Mm-hmm.
And I could see, you know, that she was full of it. And what I had in my mind then was, if she could go ahead and set her pace at the typewriter with some of those French experiences, she could get to the countryside where I was at home. So, you see, I never looked closely at what she put into those, what held those sketches together.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now, you see, I'm not a literary man by any manner of means. I've handled it all, you know, since I was almost a child, but that don't mean much. But then, a year later, when I looked back at it, and this came very slow, it's very hard, and it was something I didn't expect. And I made the statement at the very start. Now, I have to look back and see what happened. And the whole thing hangs on that one little statement. And I was struggling all the way. I didn't write the thing off. I did it little glimpse by glimpse by glimpse. Well, I had a few little things that were pat and, you know, I sort of stored up, but they didn't have any shape. They were just sort of raw in my mind. And after I got into one or two of the sketches, you see, I've done that so much. That was my stock and trade, you see. I get into pieces like that, and I try to make something of it and all. What I could see was that they were just chock full. They had far more in them than I realized. I had the faintest idea about it. See, it all surprised me. A year later, I look back at it, and it's all a surprise to me.
Mm-hmm.
That there's so much. Now, you see, that's what I got first. Now, you take that little piece on the clothes, I think, the French clothes, I think that would be the showpiece of it, because it's all visible. You see, and the high point of that is a little 4 year old.
Mm-hmm.
And he puts on those clothes in the morning and comes across the hall in Debbie's room and lets her look at him and see kind of what she thinks about him. Now, that's something, you see. And she's specific, you see. And she's circumstantial about it. I'm not. No use for me to do that. Well, now that's just one thing. Now, somewhere along the line, I saw that what she did in the reporting that she had learned from me right here at this table, the September, August the 15th, before she went up there and spent the fall with you, we had sat around the table and we'd all reported. Well, you see, when something's in the culture, it's easy to learn. And the reason the creative writing of what I found is so hard is that what they call creative writing is not in the culture. It's against the culture.
Mm-hmm.
Well, she picked up that idea of reporting. And she'd write me every now and then that fall. None of it was very promising. It was pretty stuffy. But at least she was typing, you see. Well, I knew it. I didn't really realize that it wasn't my sort of reporting. Now, my sort of reporting is the piece that she does on Mr. Weaver.
Mm-hmm.
And they all look alike until you get into them, and then you see that it's...
the guy was looking at the person, like Mark Twain.
Mm-hmm.
Looking at the person.
Just, yes.
Not the occasion, but the person.
Well, mm-hmm. You're going ahead of it.
Okay.
See, they're wholly different. They're just worlds apart.
Mm-hmm.
Well, somewhere along the line, I was able to see, and it started out there at that orange place when we were out there getting oranges. That Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
That was the thing that, and you came back here, you see, and I don't know you all. I didn't know you.
Mm-hmm.
I just seen you. I never heard you talk, and any of your escapades, adventures, and misadventures. I didn't know anything about them. You see, it's all new to me. I had absolutely no way of knowing that what she did was actually. But anyhow, you see, now what you did out there, Saturday. You did the same thing that Henriette did when she got into that cake. That was the heart of it. What she did was make an occasion of it.
Mm-hmm.
And you all are experts at it. But Debbie's not. You all are. And she learned it from you. So what she's doing, she's writing my reports according to your mentality.
Mm-hmm.
You see, your mentality gives me the creeps. I couldn't exist in it. You see, I'm too old to learn. But she can. It's a phenomenal thing. She has that immense capacity to adapt and see things and adjust. Well, I don't have it. Well, I can eventually if you give me time. I've adjusted to a lot of things in my time.
What about the orange picking day? I don't remember. What was it that you felt made you know me from that day?
Well, that's where I started out, you see. That was an occasion. And then we came back here and sat at the table.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the one little, that's the only clue I had. That's what I went from.
You laughed, don't you know? Everybody was gay,
yes.
And you laughed,
yes.
And you were,
yes.
You know, you were over there in France already,
mm-hmm.
and Guy was sort of feeling this was the wrong thing for Debbie to do.
Oh.
You know?
Uh-huh.
And I'll see. Excuse me. You all go ahead now.
Yes. Well, now that's the two things. Phoebe, that set me up in business in looking at that, looking at what Debbie did. Now,
the two things being the day that we picked oranges and came back here.
One thing is, you see, is that they are so rich, there's so much in them, but the reporting is not my kind.
Mm-hmm.
They're so rich. She sees so much about France, and I also had this in mind. You see, I've been in France.
Mm-hmm.
I've been in France long as she has.
Mm-hmm.
And I've spoken French long as she has, although I don't speak it as well, or
mm-hmm.
never did, I'm certain. Because I didn't give a damn whether it's right or not, you see. I just knocked around. I saw that they were so rich, but that's the experience I've had getting into any sort of written stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I can get into any sort of written stuff. I don't care what's literature or what the judge writes. I can. That's my mentality. That's the one thing I can do. Well, and then on top of that, I saw that what she sees, she She makes up her vacations, and that's the mentality. She doesn't learn it from you. She just picks it up from you.
Mm-hmm.
So if she hadn't been with you, there wouldn't be any French sketches.
Mm-hmm.
It's you and Katie Ogden and her mama.
Mm-hmm.
All three of you that I know, you see.
Mm-hmm.
That's, I don't know the rest of any
mm-hmm.
of the others.
Mm-hmm. Making an adventure and experience out of each
yes.
episode. Yeah.
Yes. Now, mm-hmm. what she can do, you see, what she didn't know what sketches is, she puts it into words.
Yes.
And she actually sees more than she realizes.
Mm-hmm.
Because
mm-hmm.
as a critic, Debbie hadn't got to first base yet. She can't analyze the sketches and tell what she's done.
Mm-hmm.
See, she was working, all the time she's working out here, she's working on my experience, my critical experience.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it was simple. I mean, we had it kind of open, reporting on experiences. And so she wasn't, she wasn't swarmed with critical notions. You see, we didn't go into that.
Oh, well, that's good. I think that inhibits your writing if you get swamped with critical notions, don't you?
I think so.
I think it's very difficult.
I think that's what's wrong with the university, creative writing.
Uh-huh.
Now, and I'm not supposed to talk about that, but you see, they get really, from all the money they spend, they get very few results.
Mm-hmm.
Well, anyhow, now that's the two things. Now both of those things, I'll tell you what I'll do. Let me tell you. This is a copy of it. Now, there's so much to say about it. Those things that she copied for you, that's just about half of what she did.
Mm-hmm.
Something she did was sort of private. She wrote a piece on two sisters, her and Phoebe. And one about her neighbor Shaw, and well, there's several that were you wouldn't put in, but they were all nice.
Mm-hmm.
So you see, there was just she just hit it. She would just run. Now you see, I can see this when you were doing your work up there that fall when you were here. Now, see, I'm lecturing you. I'm just sort of in a hurry. I'm afraid I won't see you again. I never know what's going to happen. One reason I don't deal with the intellectual world is that I have no control over them whatsoever. They control me. You see, you come out here, you want to go out there and paint. Well, my business is to find out about this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
We can get out a new edition of this thing. Well, I can't work outdoors. For one thing, my eyes, you see, the light makes me squint. So this is just about half, you see, of what she did in a month's time. It's phenomenal what she did.
Mm-hmm.
Just phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now when she was up there with you, Phoebe, you were painting and she had a chance to write, but she had no one to give her the critical
mm-hmm.
buckets
sounding board,
to put
right.
them in.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
she mailed them to you, though, didn't she?
She mailed a few little things, such
mm-hmm.
as they were.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know whether she could have done much more than or not. I think this thing that she really did. Now, after she wrote about the French experience, she wrote about all sorts of things.
Mm-hmm.
But you see, you never know. I never know just what happens. I try to find out, and I just. Well, I think that 6 months or so in France was so rich, and then she had you all to that you were her springboard.
Mhm.
And if it hadn't been for that, I don't think she'd ever done anything.
Maybe not. Because I told her one of the conditions of that job, when I didn't need part-time help, but I said I have to paint. Because I was sorting through a lot of things emotionally, too. And I said, I just have to paint, and I'll work on this half-time. But the condition is that you write. She'd said that she wanted to write. And then when I found out that she was doing the work in the morning, I said, Debbie, which hours are your best hours? And she said, morning. And I said, all right, you're not allowed to do my work in the morning. You have to write in the morning. I'm going out painting in the morning. We can have lunch, you can have a nap if you like, and then you can do your dumb secretarial work in the afternoon. Of course, we found occasion to break that up with tennis and other things, but so she didn't have really half-time work, but I just insisted that she work on the writing in the morning, and lots of times she didn't do it, and I would scold her. Then she'd get mad, and I'd say, oh, but Debbie, you've got to keep regular hours writing. You just, whether you feel like it or not, bat off something you could send a guy. So...
She batted off.
She did get going on that, yeah. I didn't have any luck getting her to keep a journal in France, though. I kept saying, why don't you, instead of doing all that, sometimes she read French mystery stories to try to improve her language, but I'd say, well, why don't you write something regularly, every day, that you can use as a... But I guess she just felt she didn't have anyone to write to. I think maybe that was...
She writes letters, yes, galore.
Beautiful, yeah.
Yeah, nice letters.
Yeah.
And I got 15-20 that she wrote back. And,
oh, good.
And they are...
From France?
Yeah, she wrote them in longhand on her knee. She didn't have a typewriter or anything.
Yeah.
This thing, let me just sort of sketch it, some of the things. This thing has got so much in it that I didn't realize was going in it. Now, you see, it's Debbie's sketches that are the basis of it all. But then they are my springboard.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to look at the sketches eventually through what I say, because I work it all out. I mean, I work out so much. Now, the large point, now I'm going to start all over again. The large point in it, as it stands, is in Debbie's little preface that she just put together with me standing over her shoulder, that people don't talk and report anymore.
Mm-hmm.
They take a trip or have an experience and they say, well, you ought to go to France and see all those people.
Mm-hmm.
They don't tell you about it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the point. And what she says there in that little preface is, you can talk, this is reporting, you can report too.
Mm-hmm.
And these little sketches are just like they came off the typewriter. Now, isn't that phenomenal?
Mm-hmm.
She didn't patch them up.
Mm-hmm.
Like it came out of the typewriter.
Mm-hmm.
Now that's, you see, now that affects our whole culture, our whole civilization. As soon as people get a little education, they clam up.
Mm-hmm.
Now that's, they talk, that's intellectual, they're smart, you see, and they go to the moon and things like that. Now, I wanted to know, now you see, this is built up in me over a period of years. I wanted to know what happened to all those promising young children that I had in the Emerson classes. They were so promising, and I didn't get to keep them very long. Now, I'd have to give them a little time for more schooling and a little jobs and like that, and... to see what they were going to do. And it seemed to me like, and you take the Ivy League, Duke and the others up there, with all the bright children that graduate from there, you don't hear anything from them. They leave school, guys stick the diploma under their arm, and absorbed in the body politic in the suburbs or wherever it is. They never have a voice.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now, let me tell you what I learned. Now, this was from Suzanne. She worked with me 4 years, and she had more of a critical background and reading in my field, American Literature, Moby Dick, and those, Grand Debbie. And Suzanne was best at reporting, sitting here at the table and reporting of any of the young people I work with. Now, she and Jim had this horse, And they bought us this young horse, just year old. Well, they didn't know anything about a horse, and the horse hadn't been trained. So you get ignorant people teaching an ignorant horse.
Yeah.
So it was the most ridiculous thing, and I used to think about it, and I just feel sad. Cookie would talk about it, and he just looked the other way. He just couldn't stand it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they kept up that horse and treated it almost like a pet. And it was out here, and I got tired looking at it, and I made Jim take it up and put it somewhere else. He put it in a riding place up there. And every afternoon, they'd go out there and work that horse. Bubba. Well, Susanna started telling me about it. I said, Susanna, I don't want to hear about that screwball horse. She worked with Mr. Lowe.
Was she writing too?
She wrote and reported. It's mm-hmm. all the same. And then she was...
Can I be making a drawing of you while you're talking? You don't mind, do you?
Yes, I do.
You do mind?
Yes,
all right.
You can do that later.
Okay.
Just let me get this in. And okay. You see, my mind, I have trouble with it working.
Okay, they worked with a horse every day.
She started talking one day and talking about the stable over there where she went, and she didn't pay too much attention to the horse. And she started talking about the horses and the people over there, and I could tell just like that she had seen things. Well, I said, Suzanne, go ahead. And she went ahead and talked about that darn stable and reported on it. And she had seen things in that stable that nobody else had seen. Well, one thing they can't do, they can't look at it in a critical way and see what they've done. Well, maybe they can do it in that turn, but they can't mind. And what I got out of that was this. At that age, when they're in college, or just out of college, actually, she was out of college then. She was working on a degree out of college, master's, and sometimes she wasn't working at all. What I could see was, and I stated this, I wrote a critical piece on that, was that they can go places that we can't go, and they see things that we can't see.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that led me on into, finally, you see, working with Debbie. I worked with others at the same time, but she was considerably head up in her writing. Well, now the whole thing is a history. The whole thing holds together as a history of what went on out here. And it's one approach to that question. What happens to those children? They do not have a voice.
Mm-hmm.
They have a. You see, they can see things that I can't see, and they go places I can't go. And still, they never have a voice. Now, that's all in the French experience. It's all there. Well, now that's just beginning of what's in there. And I don't know that anybody has ever looked into that before, just in those words. All right, you want her to do something, she didn't do it, and you don't know why. Well, I had that running start on her, and I kept her out here a year, you see. And that's what I look for, to see what it is happens to her. And it's pretty clear what happens. Well, you could go into it. I mean, you can see yourself. I think, I don't know what you don't care about my opinions of that. It's not my opinion, it's just what actually happens. Debbie produced out here because she didn't have anything else on mind.
Mm-hmm.
And we isolated it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, she took that just as long as she could, you know. They can't take the same fare too long.
Mm-hmm.
Then they got to stop and grow up. And then while she was out here, I worked them over on critical pieces and things like that. Oh, she was full of it. Now, well, let me tell you, Phoebe, this is really not complicated. It's not such a really a long story. I'm just going to word it. I retired a year ago. And in that year that I've been out from under those few little pitiful, puny classes I had, I've written 3 books.
Oh, good.
I never realized how those youngsters up there pulled me down.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, you see...
Well, that's great, guy. What are they on?
This is one of them.
Uh-huh.
And you see, this ought to go out in various directions. It's just the beginning. Now, Debbie went into this job up here, and she says, all I'm going to do is just put in my time up there.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to come out there on weekends, and I'm going to do that writing that's backed up behind me. Well, no use telling her that she won't.
Mm-hmm.
But she got so much up there now on her mind that if she stays in that job, she'll never write again.
Mm-hmm.
If she does, she'll write a little poem every now and then. But she won't do anything like those French sketches.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're a fine reader and all like that. But you don't go into it in a critical way. I've had to test those things so much, and those little French sketches, that outpouring, is just phenomenal. It is simply phenomenal. What happens when a person like Debbie, who has that experience, comes in touch with the right critical notions?
Mm-hmm.
And it's just phenomenal what they can do. But they can't do it themselves. They've got at that age, they can't do it themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And you see, critically, I sort of go against the practice of university. I don't care for all that critical superstructure.
Mm-hmm.
That they have. But now you see, that's just part of it. All these little Ivy Leaguers, you don't hear from them. You won't know what happens to them. That's one view of it is in the same. Now, one thing I saw about the sketches was, it was so clear to me, because I hadn't, my time in France, and especially in France, was pretty stupid. I wasn't interested in French cooking or anything like that. Well, all those things were a way of getting into the culture, entering the culture.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You don't just sit there and eat and gorge yourself because a young person not supposed to do that anyhow. They're supposed to be out turning handsprings or swimming or things like that. But the other side, you see, when they see what goes on in the kitchen, they can look through the swinging doors and see the maestro back there,
mm-hmm.
and then go back and talk to him, and he can tell you what he's doing. You see, that's a whole different thing.
Mm-hmm.
So you enter the culture, and it's something I don't know. And I don't think the French know it, and I don't think the French scholars know it.
Mm-hmm.
It's just something that come out, and I'll tell you how it came out. It's also, you see, an opening into another culture, that culture of Mr. Weaver's, at the end. And where I saw it first was there, because I had the flatheads and. They didn't belong in his world, and the question was, you see, all the time, how can they sort of talk his language?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't know, but I got the analogy. You got that picture for one thing. You got the uniform you wear. You see, the one thing I saw in Debbie, and I'd had it myself at one time, and you all still have it, that swing when you walk. You move. You get there. Well, you didn't get that here. You got that in France or Europe. It's the only place in the world you can get it. I don't know these, a lot of these things. I'm stating so definitely. I don't know. Well, she wore those jeans and that red jacket. And you see, little something ribbon around her head, keep her hair out of her face. And that would take her anywhere in France. Well, I don't know what would take them into this, what we call the countryside out here.
Mm-hmm.
I simply don't know. I'd say the jeans and, but it would have to be different. It'd have to be a different touch.
Mm-hmm.
You see, the earmarks of that is a pickup truck.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know just what goes with a pickup truck. I just actually don't know. But now you see, it opens up an entry into the French culture that I never knew before.
Mm-hmm.
But you see, it all comes from what you all saw.
Mm-hmm.
It's in the sketches. And Debbie put so damn much more in those sketches, and she realized, you see, that enabled me to see probably more clearly than you all could see when you were there. Because all I had to do was sit here and look at the piece of paper.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have to buy tickets to go
mm-hmm.
anywhere. Well, and let me tell you. Now, that mentality, like around your painting Monday, now, one of the high points of that, and Debbie worked it out, was that visit that you all had with Henriette.
Mm-hmm.
And you had the cake with the sugar in it. And you see, to me, as an outsider, that's sort of childish. But you see, it's not. It's civilized. But I still don't feel at home with it. But you all do. And I've got to the point now, you see, where I'm not trying to influence people. I'm just
mm-hmm.
trying to see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a remarkable thing. Now, there in the middle, I make the statement that, you see, the little Ivy Leaguers never find their voice because it's not in their culture. That is, it's not in y'all's culture to report. You talk, but it's not sustained reporting. Now, where I got the sustained reporting is from the countryside.
Mm-hmm.
You see, Mr. Weaver can sit in here and talk for an hour. Now, I'm talking intellectual talk, but he's talking his experience.
Mm-hmm.
And see, you take that first thing in Debbie's little preface there, that here, people who take a trip can look at this, and then they can see, they can go ahead and talk and report on whatever they do. Well, the way I picked that up, you see, was from the countryside. I've got the two cultures in my mind. Well, the French culture, I don't have it except from what I see from the jaw, so, and Debbie put in the sketches. And what little I saw in my own experience, and that was just a little. Now you've got you got that in my part of it. You've got something that you don't have in dissertations. You have an inquiry that starts with a statement and builds up and up and up and up. And includes the circumstances, the data, at every step. You see, you can read my sketch, my part of it, without reading the sketches, because I put enough in. That doesn't happen very much. So you see, now look here. Russell was here, back, and you see what she saw and what Debbie saw was that she can do her own French experience. She got all that Mississippi background.
Mm-hmm.
She got that. She made her way, you see, in the publishing world up there, kind of established herself
mm-hmm.
with the paperbacks. She took a hand in that landlord business. That the housing world up there. And then she's beginning to see what law school had to offer. Now you see, she could do it the same way. Now she doesn't write, but she talks.
Mm-hmm.
Now you see, what Debbie could do, you see, they could talk it out, and you'd get another French experience anyway. So
mm-hmm.
it's something to go by. Now that's why I say it's simply and all those things, you see, I didn't know. And all of those things happen, you see. There's nothing made up and there's nothing theoretical in it. It just records what happened. With those little propositions,
mm-hmm.
Now you've got in it. Now this is minor, but it's still interesting. Debbie uses Katie Osborne's critical term about the French, that she wanted to speak good French and perfect her use of the language. Well. Correctness, you know, now this is where I come in, and I make a statement to cut through what she's doing in order to see what she's doing. I say correctness is a very low form of the use of language. The last thing I want to do is speak English correctly. But all I'm doing is making a counter statement so I can see what she's doing. Well, Debbie don't know. I have not the faintest idea. So you see, there's another inquiry. You can keep going. It's the same thing as that little uniform you wear if you're going into the countryside, another culture.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now there you go. Now that's, I don't know. It may be. It's all in it. It's all set down. It's all there. Now you didn't get all that. When you read it?
I didn't. You're asking me if I got all that? Well, I suppose each person has a different viewpoint on every piece of writing or every picture.
Yeah.
Every picture I paint people see it differently. And I'm astonished at interpretations that people put on my work, but I can't say that any one viewpoint is more valid than the other.
Yeah. Well, those are the points that I take up, you see, in that preface, based on Debbie's sketches.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not a viewpoint. That's what is built into the
mm-hmm.
But I don't believe anybody could look at it one time and, you know, make contact with all those things. So it's almost, you know, it's a curious thing. You almost get in the position where you are. You write an essay on some sketches, and then you write an essay on the essay. Now that's really getting there.
Mm-hmm.
Now the whole thing is so unusual and so unplanned,
mm-hmm.
and it'll never happen again.
Mm-hmm.
It'll never happen to me. That it ought to. It ought to be available.
It ought to be published?
Yes,
mm-hmm.
and a good publisher, a real publisher, ought to handle it, you see. That'll give it a little bit of standing. I could take it down to the predator there in town, and he does good work, but he doesn't have the standing that on the publishing has.
She has submitted it to somebody, hasn't she? Who was it? Was it through Russell, a friend of Russell's that she submitted
yeah.
this?
Yeah. That's what she told me. Yeah.
But you think she ought to continue to make the rounds, is that it? If they turn it down, she ought to keep sending it out? Do you?
Yes, I think it ought to, and it's a full-time job getting it around. I mean, you just don't send it to somebody and tell them you work on it.
Mm-hmm.
You know that.
I don't know. I've never sent things around.
Yeah.
I had when I published, I was working with two other people, one of whom had already published. So we went to his publisher and
mm-hmm.
we didn't have to shop around.
Well, that's best. Yes, that's best.
So I don't know how it is to keep submitting and.
And your publication is very attractive. I looked at it and read little parts of it. You see,
the portrait book.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it's really full of information, isn't it?
Yes, it's out of print though. They don't seem to think.
Yes.
It's worth keeping in print.
Well, isn't that curious? Well, now that's another job that you have to face.
Mm-hmm.
Now somebody's got to keep Robert Frost in print.
Oh, really? Is he going out of print?
Well, you know how it is. Sooner or later, he'll go out,
and
somebody's got to get him back in.
Yes.
Somebody besides the publisher.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's too much for me.
What do you think that Debbie ought to do now? You think that she's making a mistake having this job? No.
Well, I can tell you kind of how I see it, but now there again, you see, I just have to. As soon as we got this off, I didn't suggest anything else to her. I mean, I was willing to work with her a little bit, but that was up to her. You know what I ought to do? I wish, you see, I'm just talking to you now, and you see me. Well, you don't need to see me, but I'm just getting in a little words. You see, just about what goes on, what takes place in this. What I'd like to do, you see. I see this. This is old stuff to me now, except I'm interested in it. And these are the terms in which I sink. I would like to see more of you all, you see. I don't have a chance to see people like you all who do so many things. And anyone who can perform the way you do, it's amazing. Now you say up at the university, they do it over another department there, but you know it's almost like they speak a different language. Like you go from Denmark to Germany, the languages are akin, but they don't quite work.
Mm-hmm.
They're not interchangeable, and I can't go over to the painting department or the art department and find out anything. I can't do it. I don't have access. They'd kick me out. I mean, I would be an intruder over there. I can go to some program. I can go to the gallery and all like that, but that's different from watching somebody work. So, you see, one thing, now, I don't know, it looks to me like that the writing side of it is not just writing, but it's mostly seeing. And you take someone like Debbie whose mind adjusts so easily. Now she could sit on the typewriter and tell you everything that happened out there on Saturday afternoon, including what they said about your work.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she can do it circumstantial. With no effort. Well, the first go round, it might not add up to much, but she might have to look at it twice. And for me, that would be most one of the most enlightening things you could do. If she could put down, she never wrote about her friends. She never wrote about you or Katie Osborne.
Mm-hmm.
And she wrote about the UNALs. It took her a long time before she would do that. And it was at my insistence. At least I kept it before her. I didn't insist or mm-hmm. press her to do anything. But she finally got around to it. But now she feels close to you, she wouldn't write about you. But you see, actually, what she's writing about is not about you, it's about your method and the kind of performance out there. If she could treat that in the same way she treated the thing about Henriette.
Mm-hmm.
And you see, that thing about Henriette is something I'd never see. It's something one person in a million would ever have an opportunity to see. And then that person might not be able to report on it. So, you see, she has an entry through you all into, good Lord, how much, you see.
Mm-hmm.
So, in my view, but you see now, they have to paddle their own canoe. In my view, what she ought to be doing is things like that. But I think, Phoebe, now this is the way I would state it. Now this is not personal, you understand? I'm not trying to regulate anybody. But Debbie's culture and your culture doesn't permit it. You see, the whole attitude that makes that possible is against the writing side of it. She got to be detached. She got to live it, but then she got to get out of it in order to set it down. Now, one of the phenomenal things for me is that you don't have to do that. You can stay right in the middle of it and just love it. Now, I'm just taking your word for it and what they said. But it doesn't work quite like that for writing. So, now that's in my part of the French experience. You see, that she never would have written those sketches. She learned it, and she saw it through you all. But in your culture, it's not in your culture to put it in writing.
It's not in my culture to put it in writing.
Yours.
Mm-hmm.
You and Katie and all of you. In your culture, you see it and you talk about it amongst you, but you don't report on it like Mr. Weaver does.
Mm-hmm.
You see, now that's one thing she's heard that you haven't heard. She's heard Mr. Weaver report.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a former culture. That's the old culture. I don't know, it may be the uneducated culture, I don't know. But you see, Homer was uneducated.
Mm-hmm. That may not be true, though. Katie Osborne and Katie Bowers, Katie Osborne is a published author, and she's writing now, she's writing a book now, she's writing all the time. Katie Bowers writes beautiful letters, and that's how all the girls learn to write such beautiful letters. I keep a journal.
Well, you see, I didn't know Katie Bowers wrote letters.
Katie Bowers writes beautiful letters, yes. She writes very vivid letters. And I don't think Debbie would ever have learned how to write the letters that she wrote if it hadn't been...
Well, Debbie writes those letters, and then she keeps a...
Carbon.
Carbon.
I told her to do that, because I said, you're putting so much into your letters. You're doing creative writing in this form,
yeah.
So keep a carbon for yourself.
Well, let me tell you, Phoebe...
When I was 15, the minister of our Unitarian church happened to be sitting next to him at a church supper. Mother asked if I'd go to a church supper, and I said, hell no. Why should I go to a church supper? I hate. And then I said, Mother, why did you ask me? And she said in a small voice, because I'm the speaker. And I said, oh, well, in that case, I'll go. And I was sitting between Mother and the minister, whom I adored. And he turned to me suddenly out of a clear blue sky. He didn't have anything to lead up to it. He turned, but I think he knew adolescence. And he said, Phoebe, do you want to be a writer? And I said, yes, I thought I did. And he said, well, my advice to you is to write something every day. And I went home that night and wrote that down. And I wrote something every day for 20 or 30 years after that. And then when I got into painting, I did it spasmodically. If I hadn't been painting, then I would write something. But he was absolutely right that you have to keep writing regularly. And I told Debbie that.
Yeah.
And I said, whether you feel like it or not, report or write an impression or write a poem or just write a line saying, I am too tired to write.
Yeah.
But you put something down in words.
Yeah.
And then I made a rule for myself that I'd have to do the same in sketching. And Mother always said, her mother had told her that you should never take a trip without a journal and a sketchbook. And she never took it. She went around the world twice, and she went to India a couple of times, and she traveled all over, and she never took a trip without a sketchbook and a journal.
Mm-hmm. So you came right straight.
Yeah, and you try to keep those two disciplines in balance. They don't, because if I get terribly carried away with pictures, then I forget the words. But
mm-hmm.
sometimes one well dries up and the other one. But I feel that it's important, as I have told Debbie, I think it's important, if you can, to have two arts going. The analogy I use is digging a hole in the sand. You can't go straight down. You have to widen the top. And if you're going straight down, you're apt to go stale. That's when everything caves in on you. So then you just widen the top. And when I've gone stale on painting, I took a short story writing course one time because...
Oh, really?
I felt that I came to a stopping place painting, and I just couldn't go any further. I didn't get very far in the short story writing, but I certainly picked up with a zest in the painting,
yeah.
and got a whole new viewpoint.
Yeah. Well, now she has adopted that view of yours, because she says herself that she ought to paint.
Oh, really?
And she doesn't. She didn't talk as if she felt that she was going to be a painter, but she felt that she had learned so much from you that it was almost a waste of the time for her not to paint.
Oh. That's interesting, yeah.
So, I would go along with that, certainly. But here's the thing about what she's doing now, Phoebe. She puts in 8 hours.
Yes. And she's dead at the end of the day.
And then nothing, you see, your mind won't work after that. You see, she's at the rich part now. I mean, she can come out here and sit down and just talk and just keep. You thought, well, as long as Debbie talks, I don't have to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
And it's informative. What
mm-hmm.
she says is something that you want to hear.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
She can talk about the office up there or anything that she's interested in. So you see, as long as your mind is doing that, you just got to use it.
Yes. She's not wasting her time. We look forward to Debbie coming home at night and telling them, and of course her ability to discover humor in this, whatever she's doing, is just fantastic. And she can make it humorous. And we're in stitches every night when she comes home with a funny story about what she's done.
Is that, you hear that?
Mm-hmm.
You see?
Mm-hmm.
Now, Debbie does, though, her reporting is more sustained than any of the others of you.
Mm-hmm.
Now, she learned that out here
mm-hmm.
from me, and I learned it from the, you see, I didn't invent it. I learned it from the countryside.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why you can't learn. You see, Homer was blind, and I think he was illiterate.
Mm-hmm. He probably couldn't read, yeah.
Yeah. He didn't need to. You know, one of the phenomenal things I found that these flatheads can do, that's the general...
What's a flathead? I don't know that.
That's Debbie and all these...
That's
a word we just made up, flathead. They're also bright, you see. We call them flatheads.
These are the students? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They're so bright, we just call them flatheads. They are so bright. Oh, it's shameful how they can go from one thing to another. They don't have to wind up in it the way I do.
Yeah.
I forgot what I was going to say. They
Are you chilling?
No, I just...
I have a few tapes of Cookie and the rest of them, and what they do is they go out there and talk to Cookie, and then they come in here and listen to the tape of Cookie, and they see how damn little they hear.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only use they have for the tapes. And once they hear the tape, then they can hear Cookie.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't need the tape. Now, that is what astounded me.
Mm-hmm.
They can just talk, they can just write for an hour or two about what went on for an hour or two.
Remember the time Debbie was sitting right there and she'd been writing on Dan Dan. And Cookie came in and he sat there and he told about a trade, and it was very circumstantial. He'd been horse trading. And it was just as circumstantial as it could be. And I looked at Debbie, and her eyes got bigger and more luminous than ever. And she followed Cookie on out the door. And as Cookie went on to his truck, she said, "That's the first time I ever really saw anybody."
That's right.
And she said, "All you have to do is to put down what he said."
Mm-hmm.
And she said, "My sketch on Dan Dan isn't about Dan Dan at all. It could be any English woman. I never looked at Dan Dan."
Uh-huh.
That's right.
I just put down little.
Well, now you see, that's a good case. Now you see the culture's mixing.
Mm-hmm.
And Cookie's in the countryside, like Mr. Weaver. So, you see, it's been so recent since I knew any of this. It was in the fall of 68. I had these friends, you see. I always felt at home in the countryside. I was brought up there. But... And the thing that alarmed me that summer, towards the end of the summer, you see, I'd go over to see Miss Patterson or Fell, any of them, and nothing ever worried me. I could just sit over there and talk with them 15, 20 minutes or a half hour, an hour or two, and that damn university could just go jump in the lake. It didn't bother me at all. Nothing bothered me, you see. Once... That's an extraordinary thing. I find once I make contact with someone where there's no effort, and you sort of feel like you understand what goes on, it looks like the struggle's over.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way I felt the countryside. Well, what I saw was that they were all getting along and had all sort of ailments, and I just felt it's so such a beautiful season, and what I felt was that, good Lord, this is fine while it lasts, but it's not going to last, and I haven't got any buckets to put it in. I can't save it, can't keep it. Well, I was depressed, and I didn't go around them for several weeks. And then after school started, along towards the middle of September, I took that little Sony tape recorder I had and slung it over my shoulder. And I went to three places, Mr. Gilbert's, and then on down to Mabel and Fells, and then I was over at Mr. Morgerson's. That was the year he was lit up over Governor Wallace. And each place I went, the talk was just phenomenal. And the beauty of the cassettes was, they weren't any good. You see, you couldn't sell them for anything. And I played them over and over again. Faye listened to them and says, "I don't know what you're fooling with those things for." And I'd transcribe them, and I'd outline them, and I'd listen to them, and I would look for the leading ideas and all. I just performed all the pedantic operations on them that I knew.
Mm-hmm.
And then I don't know how it was, but somehow it came to me that the one thing they were, all that talk that people won't listen to, they call it hot air, you see, and just shooting the breeze. All that talk was actually informative. There was no chatter.
Mm-hmm.
It was informative, and the information came from that experience. Now, that's the two statements I made almost at one time. And that's what enabled me to go. Then, you see, I had a critical basis for it. it was substantial, and I could see it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I could go from that, and eventually I got to the point, see, where I could see that if I could listen to them, you see, I could look at that world. But it was never quite personal. I never really meddled with people's private lives. It actually, the countryside still have that old feeling for things that are public. Everything they know is public. There's not very much private life there. It just don't exist.
Mm-hmm.
So anything they know, they tell you. As they go to hospital, they tell you about the operation. They don't tell you because they are sadistic, but anything that goes on, and something is always on going on with them.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll line it out for you. If you don't have to ask them a question, you just hang around, and first thing you know, it'll all come out. But you see, with educated people, they learn to be cautious and to be restrained, and it's one hell of a job just to find what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm not against the educated people, but you see, you can see better if you can see both.
You get under the veneer, yes.
Yes, and that is the insight that enabled me to work with Debbie.
Mm-hmm.
And Debbie could see that, maybe you already said this, and maybe I don't need to say it again, but she could see that there were certain things that she had to do in order to enter, say, the French culture,
mm-hmm.
or any culture.
Mm-hmm.
But there was also certain things that she had to do in order to enter
yeah.
the culture out here, and it was just as difficult.
Mm-hmm.
Any culture you get into. She simply couldn't carry her old instincts over into this world out here and not be isolated. She had to see there.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
it's the first time she ever really, I think, looked at another culture other than her own.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, that's a good experience. That's a marvelous experience.
Because yeah. you're going to write.
Mm-hmm.
You take the laughter that's in one of the sketches. You remember that?
The what?
Laughter.
Assisi, wasn't that
well,
the
laughter? Well, you were at Assisi.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yes. When that woman was at the table with her
yeah.
back to us, yes.
Yeah. Well, it happens here, you see, Debbie talked a great deal about a mother and her. When they got together, something would get them amused, and they'd start laughing. Well, the reporting side of it, and I've seen it in others, but I hadn't seen it before that, they'll report a little bit and then they'll laugh. Now, I just looked at the laughter as part of the reporting. Well, now I just looked at it. I didn't make any decisions. I don't have to do that because I can't. The question is, you see, whether the laughter helps the reporting. Now, if Debbie come home from work and starts telling you something and then bursts out laughing, you don't get much. On the other hand, you've got to look at it. You see that a part of her of what she sees is amusing
mm-hmm.
and worth laughing about. And if everybody laughs about it, it's a sign they see.
Mm-hmm.
So
that she points out the humor and that she can see the humor in her job, I think, is quite a talent.
Sure. Yes, that's.
You see, Debbie sees about
so.
Everything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she sees so much.
Mm-hmm.
And she can put it down. I don't know how
you're going to arrange it, Phoebe, but I think the adults will have to arrange it. I one thing I noticed about Debbie, she doesn't meddle with the environment. Whatever the situation is, she takes it
mm-hmm.
and lives in it. But she doesn't maneuver in order to make her environment. I do. And that's the reason I've been able to work with the countryside out here. I learned to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I never did it before.
She used to tell Guy, that you would say, if you're going to write, or if you're going to paint, if you're going to do music, it takes work.
Yeah.
More work. And more work. Well, I know that.
Sure. You wouldn't be a musician if you... Yeah.
I can put a sign on my door and say, look, I'm practicing.
Mm-hmm.
You're painting, you see. That's all. That's what you're doing. But look how many interferences Debbie gets.
Yeah.
And she's so civil.
And
you
she's
see.
So civil. Mm-hmm. And this is my concern, and guys, too. I don't know whether we'll let her write or not.
Mm-hmm.
It's her civility.
Well, she has turned down an offer. Her parents offered to give her an allowance, and she refused that. When she ran out of her money in Boston, she said she wanted to earn money. And she insists on this, and she had told me this, that she wanted to. She wouldn't come. I wanted her to come and write, and she said she wouldn't come unless she could earn money. And so I said, well, I certainly need a part-time secretary, and I'll give you board and room and just hourly rate. So she got her spending money, the money
well,
that she paid on writing.
Out here.
Mm-hmm. But she would not. She simply would not take a handout. She won't take a handout from her father either. And it's she who insists on doing this job. She needs a car, and she won't accept a car from anybody. She needs to earn enough to make a down payment. The only consoling thing about this job, I guess, is the fact that it pays well. I don't know what it pays, but she says it pays very well. And she needs to make a down payment on a car, and she needs to have an apartment of her own. She told me the other night that she is not going to stay there indefinitely. She said, I'm a daughter here. That's just a fact. I'm a daughter. I've got to have my own apartment. She was typing away madly one night, and she came into my room and said she'd been writing her journal, and I said, that's wonderful, and it takes a lot of determination to write after you've been working all day, and she said that. But there are so many times that she can't do that writing. But I think that this is, Debbie's made up her mind, she's got to earn enough money to have, an apartment is expensive too, but she wants to pay her own apartment, she wants to have her own car. And this morning, I do try to get up. I haven't managed it every day, but for the last couple of days I've gotten up so that I can have a visit with her at breakfast before she goes to work. And I said, Debbie, what can I do to help you? And she said, oh, you can't do anything. You've done so much. And I said, well, do you feel that you should earn money until you can get an apartment and a car? And she said, yes, I can't get anywhere in Gainesville. Gainesville is not geared up for no cars. And I said something about the bicycle, and she said it takes so long to get anywhere. She had said that she wanted to get her tires pumped up on her bicycle, and I said, well, do you think you can get around town on a bicycle and not have to work so long until you can get a car? But she said she now thinks that she has to have a car. I don't know, but I think that this is something she's got to figure out. But I feel, now I haven't said this to anybody, including Debbie, I feel that if she could get a room by herself, she'd find a lot more time to work.
Phoebe.
In the first place, she may find that she gets up and writes for an hour before work. That's what I would do. I would write when my mind was, but it just happens that I'm an a.m. mind rather than a p.m. mind. I tend to fall asleep at 9 o'clock at night, and if
I
had to come home at 9:30, if I had to come home and do work then, I just wouldn't do it.
Yeah.
But I would rather give my second best mind to the pay job and give my first best intelligence to the.
Now, it may be that if she does this, she might feel that she would have some obligation, and so maybe you can help out on this. In the first place, Debbie knows she can have this car out here.
Mm-hmm.
Just for a dollar.
Mm-hmm.
And the car is a good car.
Mm-hmm.
And it's why we're keeping it, for Debbie to have it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, and there's no obligation, except we wanted to have it in her name.
Mm-hmm.
All right. She also knows that I have a house in town that I have told her she can have.
Mm-hmm.
I need somebody in it.
Mm-hmm.
I need somebody in it. It's better off with somebody in it. And I told
her. There isn't anybody there. No.
Nobody in it at all.
Mm-hmm.
And I told her if she wanted to pay part of the utilities bill,
mm-hmm.
I couldn't rent it, but if she wanted to pay part of it, I don't want her to feel obligated.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm doing this, now I have to repay it somebody. I want her to be independent. And she can put her own posters up in her room, and she can use the kitchen and everything else. She knows that she can do this.
Yeah.
Without any
What did she say when you offered it
she
to her?
She wanted it. She said she'd like to do it. But she'd like to have her first paycheck. Now,
but she just
know.
Got this week. You know, it took them 6 weeks
yeah.
to pair.
I don't know where this independent
yeah.
thing has come out. But you see, she knows that she can't write at home.
Yes. Yeah.
And she also knows that she has to keep some kind of contact with somebody who's sympathetic to her writing, which
yeah.
is God.
You have to have a sounding board, yeah.
A sounding board. And, she told me, she said, now I'm not going to be in this job too long.
Mm-hmm.
So now this is the sort of thing that is possible. And I said to her, you don't want to work long hours, Debbie, and then just invest in a car.
Mm-hmm.
To have nothing short. I mean, I try to not say what to do and what not to do.
Mm-hmm.
But I said, until you get what you want, you can have this car. You can have it.
Wow. Yeah.
Well, it's not worth anything, but it's a good car.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good car. We couldn't sell it for anything, but it's a good car.
You know how they are.
What would it, if you sold it for, how much would it sell for?
$300.
Well, maybe she'd buy it for $300.
Well, if that if
she'd feel happier about that.
Happier, I'd say $150 or $300 or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. But the thing about it is, I just can't see her tied to making payments on a car.
No. Well, I don't know whether, she didn't
so,
spell it out. She
yeah.
just said, I do
yeah.
feel I should have a...
Yeah. But she had said that all along.
She said she wasn't sure how long she should stay in the South either. She doesn't know whether this is... She wants to be out in the country, I guess. She doesn't know whether she wants to be in the Gainesville. She doesn't know whether where she wants to be.
She told me and Guy, I guess, that she just had to sort of see whether if this was what she wants, she likes your door well so much, you know. If this is what she wanted to write, but she said, to write is what I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
Well, a lot of people are like, you know what John's doing? He's reading David's sketches.
Oh, okay.
And he says he'll have a sandwich with us, and then he will go on. So whenever we want to take
yeah.
a break, we can go out and have a sandwich.
Well,
let me tell you,
we
just talked
to
Phoebe Dunn. I just figured we wouldn't see her. We wouldn't.
She's going to be here. We're going to have a sandwich, and she's
yeah,
going to have a sandwich. We have plenty of sandwiches over here.
And we're going to.
You never know what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And you can set up your thing outside in the living
room, or in the living room. I don't know.
Let
I have
me
to
tell you,
Phoebe,
I want you to get this straight now, what I told you.
Yeah.
I'll write it out for you.
Will
these,
you?
These
all
little
right.
pieces, you see. Like,
yes.
You see, it's your culture. I'd say mentality, but it's really your culture. And I'm not acquainted with it. I never, you see, I've known people like you all naturally. But I never known you closely enough,
mm-hmm.
and see you operate. Why, it's just phenomenal. That's one of the revelations of that French experience. You see, is at least is not their whole mentality, but it's in part their mentality that you see in it, Faye. And the thing that you see is that everything you touch is rich. And the one thing you see that is rich is that occasion. And you make something of it. In other words, you make something of whatever going on.
Mm-hmm.
It's just phenomenal. But now what I said in that was, I didn't pass judgment on it or on anything.
Mm-hmm.
But I said it wasn't in your culture to report on it. And I still don't think it is.
Mm-hmm.
And writing books doesn't mean that,
no.
that you're reporting. What I said was that it's not in that culture to report, but and you see Debbie couldn't see that, and she couldn't see the culture. So there's in that little sketch there, you see that I wrote. I look at what you all do, and it actually opens it up to where and says things that you all never saw, and I never saw them either.
Mm-hmm.
It, see, I put my mind to that. See, I worked on that steady. Oh, I worked on that a long time. I did it day after day after day, and I'd reach a dead end, and I'd say, well, where am I going next? I just can't get any further.
Mm-hmm.
The piece on Chartres that I like so much. See, she's not really talking about Chartres. She doesn't know anything about Chartres.
Mm-hmm.
No, Chartres not really.
See, Chartres not in it, and it's a young girl's feeling for the first time for this.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And but Guy had to look at it and see it because you know you couldn't say to somebody who's an authority on Chartres, well, here's a piece on Chartres.
Mm-hmm.
It's not at all.
Mm-hmm.
But she saw it through your eyes.
Yeah. Now there's a revision of that in which she tried to look at Chartres. And it's just about as dead as it can be. And she wouldn't even put it in. I kept telling her, Debbie, it'd be nice if you could get a little of Chartres into your piece.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she redid it and put a little of it in.
She tried to put one of the pictures in.
It was heavy.
Yeah. Did she?
And she didn't like it.
Yeah.
But it's this is the master copy there. I don't have any copies of that. We didn't give them all away. And
know what she did with Mont Michel? Gave order to the countryside. Well, you see, it's not on Mont Michel at all.
Mm-hmm.
No, there's very little about it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about the
Mont Saint Michel.
It's not that at all. It's
you see,
it's
the fate, what we miss, though, what we miss, but it's all right. You see, Debbie can go from one little outfit to another, one little culture, one little island to another, you see. And she sees what we do out here, and she sees what Phoebe Flory does.
Mm-hmm.
And that mentality, Phoebe, it's just too choice to waste on a bunch of old flat dissertations up there.
Oh, yes, yeah.
It's just phenomenal what
yeah.
that child can do.
Yeah.
Yeah, she can do it.
Well, how's she going to earn money in doing it, though?
She don't have to earn the money. Hell, I've got money. I'll stake her.
It's that pride she's got.
Yeah,
you don't need pride to do that.
And Phoebe would do the same thing for her, wouldn't you?
Sure.
We'd all be glad to just say, look, that's undermining
yeah,
her.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I...
But that would probably be undermining her if we insisted.
If she could just get herself in a place where she would write.
Mm-hmm.
And she didn't write at your place. Not really much.
Yeah. I think she learned here. She learned the discipline of, but don't you feel, Faye, that you have to learn the discipline of writing or doing your art part time? For instance, Don Erb, who is a composer with whom I taught a course one time relating art and music, used to teach 12 hours a day and then come home and do his composing. He taught at the Music Institute in Cleveland. He'd get up, leave the house at 7:30 in the morning. He'd teach at the conservatory. Then the afternoon, the kids would come home in from school, and he'd give their piano lessons or whatever he was teaching them. The adults would come in. He'd go out and get a hamburger, and the adults would come in. He'd teach till 10:30 at night. 10. He'd get home at 10:30. Lucille would have supper for him. He'd sleep till 11:30. He'd get up and compose from 12 to 2. And he did that for years. He did some of his best composing, all his early composing. I don't know how he did it. And finally, I got to know him in that period, and then he got Guggenheim's and Ford's and various things. He was out in Bakersfield when he did the music for my movie, and he was still composing at night after he taught. Then he was in Bowling Green, and I went down to visit them. He was on some other grant, or maybe he was composer in residence at Bowling Green, Ohio, which is a very stupid university, and he was very bored with it. And he said, Phoebe, I stopped composing. I don't know what to do. I just run dry. I come home at night, and I get home earlier. I can start working at, say, 9 o'clock at night, and nothing happens. And I said, well, Don, why don't you reverse your day? Get up early in the morning and give your best hours to composing. So he tried that. He got up 5:30 or 6 in the morning, and he composed until maybe 8:30. And he reported to me the next time I saw him. That worked. It was just changing the day around and getting a whole new schedule. But he put in 2 hours of work every day before he went to the rock pile. But Don has had to learn. Now, this year, last year, he was composer in residence at the Institute and has one theory class. He teaches one day, and the rest of the time he's composing. But he's earned that. He's almost 50 now. But all through his years of building up his creativity, he had to learn to wedge it in with other things. And that's part of it. You have to be strong physically, too. You have to have a very strong psyche, and you have to be able to drive yourself like that. But he said that to him it was essential to keep regular hours of composing, that you just turn it. And I kept telling that to Debbie. If I get up in the morning and work, sometimes when I have a difficult job to do, I like the slides, when I'm working on the slide tapes, and I hate to come off painting and do that. But it's another kind of creative thing, and it's another kind of visual work. I will make myself get up at 5:30 in the morning so that I can have about 3 hours uninterrupted time of what I call my best mind. Then if I stop at have breakfast at 8:30 or 8 or 8:30, I feel I've done half a day's work, so that I don't feel so guilty about it. And then maybe I work till noon, and then I can do the other thing. And I kept the only way that I've been able, and I've had to conform a lot of to, you know, sort of a, in many ways, a very mundane or very life that has all kinds of other demands on me. Maybe I made myself conform, but I feel that learning the discipline of making yourself work, whether you feel like it or not. Now, don't you find that there are many times you don't feel like practicing, but you sit down and practice? And part of it, lots of times, for instance, I don't feel like doing a portrait, but I feel that if, like this period, now when I've set myself an assignment of doing regular portraits, whether I feel like it or not, it's interesting to know how much I can learn to turn on the faucet and turn it off, whether spirit... And sometimes you do a much better job. You never know when you turn that faucet on whether you're going to do a very... If you do a poor job, you say, well, I didn't get enough sleep last night, or I wasn't in the mood or something, so what? But sometimes you surprise yourself by getting a better one. But I think the regularity of just making yourself do it is terribly important.
I don't believe there's any substitute for it.
No, I don't think there's any substitute mm-hmm. for it, but I've not seen that in the young.
Have to keep
the discipline of doing that, yeah.
Just any little thing will take them off.
Yeah.
You know, we can talk about these are the essential things, Faye. I've just flooded it with it, some of the things about the Trinity experience. But we'll have to, maybe we'll have a chance to
well, let's take a break and then we can come
time.
Back.
I don't mean today, I mean time to time, maybe. Uh-huh. And you see, there's a lot of things, experience Phoebe's had that we've no idea about it that would be helpful. And, you see, my bibliography, I haven't spoken to you about that, see. I tell you about the countryside, but I also have my literary sources.
Uh-huh.
Well, Ishmael, the early Ishmael in Moby Dick is one of them. And the early Twain in Roughing It is one. Miss Rawlins in her Cross Creek Sketches is one.
Mm-hmm.
Ratcliffe, you see, in Faulkner's Hamlet is one. Now, they're the people whose experience I also go on, or try to go on.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought Ratcliffe in Faulkner was part-time for a long time. And then I came to the point where it was full-time. And what you do, you've got to manage, you can't do the same thing all the time. Here's what makes it full time. The experience you have in this sort of thing I talk about, or the French sketches, the experience you have, you have to use it. And you can't have it and store it.
That's right. That's right.
What makes this life full time is that you got your raw experience,
mm-hmm.
and then you got to go come home and look at it on the typewriter.
That's right. Regularly.
Yes.
You may not do the writing full time.
No.
But if you are, as I kept trying to tell Debbie, if you are keeping a journal, for instance, if you are making yourself write half an hour a day or 45
sure.
minutes a day or whatever it is, to put that down or to turn an experience into an episode or a little story or whatever it is you're doing, then as you go around having experiences, you see it more. You think in terms of these episodes. For instance, if I don't paint regularly, I stop thinking. I stop dreaming visually. It is now, if I'm painting, pictures while I'm asleep at night. Well, last summer when I had this very intensive school that people paint 6 days a week, in the morning and afternoon and evening, we have open studio practice class session when I demonstrate and they paint. Then we have practice session when we set up a model and they here are given assignment to do something, but I'm not there to criticize it. I walk out after I set it up. Then open studio when they can catch up on do whatever they want to. But that means they're painting 12 hours a day. Well, one day one of my students came into class last summer and she said, Phoebe, I'm exhausted. I painted all night. And I said, Gretchen, that is no way to be an artist. You've got to get your sleep. She said, I went to bed, but I dreamt all night long. I said, that's great. I really achieved something if I've got you thinking about painting morning, noon, and night and through your sleep. Well, if you stop writing, you don't think about things in terms of writing. And that's why whether she turns out anything in her journal that's publishable or not, she's still thinking in terms of an experience being a writing material, and that's what keeps it alive. I think then she could if she worked on weekends or had a lump of time, or she can.
Your critical viewers have a lot to do with that. Now, what I've worked out here, with the help of a lot of people who've been out here with me,
mm-hmm.
is this idea of reporting. We don't use the word writing. We're reporting,
mm-hmm.
and it's the same thing. If we sit here, like Debbie comes home and reports to you about what happened,
mm-hmm.
she reports the same way she would write it.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Well, as long as she got an audience, you know, really, that reporting doesn't tire her. That refreshes her.
Yes. Right.
And it doesn't refresh me. I'm not a talker. I talk a whole lot, but I don't enjoy it. But I go to the typewriter,
mm-hmm.
and it just makes me sleep fine.
Yes.
It just relieves my mind.
Right.
It takes the burden off.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
But you see, it's...
Well, I think you're right that she is quite a raconteur, and as she exercises that talent, it has something to do with her seeing an episode. And I can see her stories are far more entertaining now than before she had the writing experience with you.
Yeah.
Because she's seeing them in terms of what's valuable. And I can also tell, I look forward to the drinking hour when we come home and we sit on the porch and have an hour pause, the adventure time, and everybody tells their adventures of the day and they see what pictures I've painted. And I look forward to hearing what Debbie, we say, what happened to you, Debbie? And you can see her eyes light up all day long. She's been looking for material for the sounding board, you see, and she has marvelous tales to tell. And I think that she does have an audience. Her mother has that ability of making something dramatic out of whether either it's adversity or of.
Now you see, Faith, look here. You see the culture Debbie comes from. You see how rich it is.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah.
But let me tell you, Phoebe, you still got to face it that your culture does not produce writers.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when I say that, you see,
I don't know what produces it. I don't know whether it does or not. I don't know whether I
agree
or disagree.
That's
with
what
you.
I was going to say. But that's as far as I've got. But that's as far as I've seen.
Yes.
But your culture did not produce any writing.
Mm-hmm.
But it produces all this damn rich experience,
mm-hmm.
which writers don't have. Let me tell you. The saddest thing I see is these so-called writers studying at the university and they've got nothing to report on.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
They got nothing to say.